I want to thank Senator Klobuchar, and I want to thank ELI. Let me say this, I absolutely love brilliant, tough women from Minnesota. My mother happened to be a brilliant, tough woman from Minnesota, and my grandmother happened to be a brilliant, tough woman from Minnesota. But unlike them, I got a chance to go on Senator Klobuchar's web page and to see exactly what she stands for, and she stands for everything that I believe in about energy, right from the local level to the global level. So I think she should be very nervous about the kind of groupie that's forming on the stage here. And I also want to say thank you very much to ELI. I spent some time going through to understand exactly what the people in this room do. It overlaps incredibly well with what I've been doing, what I've been doing with George, and some other things that we've been working on together, which I want to talk about a little bit tonight. But the approach is incredibly similar, the values are incredibly similar, and the mission is incredibly similar. So I want to say to you, thank you for what you do. It's nice that you gave George and me this award, but I'm much happier to thank you for what you do on an ongoing basis, in which I consider to be of vital importance. And let me also say this. I understand where I sit in this partnership. I see myself as part of the greatest slugging brothers in history, which were the Aaron brothers, Hank Aaron, and his brother Tommy Aaron, who between them hit 768 home runs. I'm very proud of that number, 768. Hank hit 755. Tommy hit 13. You can guess which one I am. And let me say this. I think you guys got just a touch of how terrific George Shultz really is. Just a touch. I have had a chance to work with him over the last 3 or 4 years, and he is absolutely as sharp as a tack. He is an incredibly good person with incredibly good values. He is absolutely fun as hell, and he is just a great person to work with. I mean, at the last party we had, George stood up after dinner to sing a song. So he really is. We have a rule in California, which we're going to try and I'll try and live up to tonight, which is everything that we do has got to be fun and productive. If it's not fun, you're not going to keep doing it, and if it's not productive, there's no reason to do it. So what that has been the motto of our partnership. Everything we do has got to be both. And let's see if I can carry that out. I will say this. People think that George and I are really different. So let me go through the differences. We're from different parties. We're from different generations. And we really have one thing that might surprise you. We have very, very different sets of friends. Even though he and I are very good friends and he has an absolutely spectacular wife. On the night that George went to Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday party with a group of his best friends, my wife and I were at a hip-hop party in Oakland celebrating solar energy. I couldn't really see myself at the Reagan 100th birthday, to be honest, and I certainly couldn't see George and Charlotte at the hip-hop party over in Oakland. But the truth of the matter is that George and I have an amazing amount of the same values. We really aren't different in any of the big things. You know, we really view the values that we're fighting for in the series of things that we've done, which really started but certainly didn't end with the No on 23 campaign. We really have three things that we think we stand for. One is we really stand for the democratic process. We want to win this through votes. We really believe in the American people and that we can win when we have this conversation openly in an intelligent way. The second thing is we both really believe that the private enterprise system, given the right incentives, given the right framework, is the answer to this problem. Neither of us is in the position of trying to blame private enterprise. In fact, we think that will be the solution once the policies are in place. And lastly, we have a very exciting idea together, which he mentioned, which is we have the thrilling idea that full cost accounting is the thing that will make a huge difference. And without teasing, we really believe that. It's a simple idea, the polluter pays. It's not more complicated than that, and that's exactly what George was talking about. It isn't about raising revenue, it isn't about anything else. It's about having a level playing field where the polluter pays for their pollution. If we can do that, we really believe that will unshackle the innovation, the research, the incredible changes that the American private enterprise can come up with. So I would remind you, very briefly, to contrast the energy industry with the communications industry, where in 1983, when I was coming out of business school, they were just breaking up AT&T. In 1996, they deregulated communications. In 1983, I remember my family was certainly still using a rotary phone. There had been really nothing that had changed. And today, the big news is the Twitter IPO. But getting from my family's rotary phone to the Twitter IPO is 10,000 innovations. That is what the American private enterprise system can do under the right circumstances. That's what it's fully capable of doing. That's exactly how we're going to solve this problem. But the big question that I would like to address tonight, coming from our experience in California, is so what? What is there that really is transferable? Why does it really matter? What are the lessons? So let me say this. We in California are very proud of the concept that we lead the nation. Extremely proud. We are the first state to really go bankrupt. We're the first state, you may remember, which I thought was a terrific innovation, to pay in scrip because we had no money. We're the first state where the legislature had less than a 15% approval rating. Very proud of that. We really know how to do it right. So we had, George and I not only did the No on 23 campaign, in 2012, we ran another proposition, which was a yes proposition, which was changing the way out-of-state companies paid state income tax because there was a loophole that saved them over $1 billion a year. It was a very complicated prop. We used half the money to retrofit schools for energy and use the savings to make the schools better. So we had two completely different propositions. We had one that was a defense of a very broad energy bill. We had one that was a complicated yes. We had one that was the most highly talked about proposition in an off-year election, one which was way down ballot. It was Prop 39. I mean, think about that, Prop 39. There were a few other things on the ballot, including the president. But the conclusions of how we won were exactly the same, and I actually think, from what we can tell in the stuff that we've done outside California, that they resonate across the country. The first thing that we did was, George talked about coalition, and I want to talk about that last. But the first thing we did was we had a completely different message from the traditional environmental message. And the traditional environmental message has to do with the environment. Unfortunately, in California, when there was a proposition, when there was an election that contrasted environmental values with jobs, environmental values lost. So the first, we had three messages. One was jobs, why the new energy economy was going to create more jobs than existed. And that was something that we had business people talk about. Secondly, health. We felt that the way that people actually respond to pollution is through health, particularly of their kids, and a lot of the greenhouse gases go out with other kinds of pollution that actually cause asthma. So people actually relate to that because they can see it, they can think about it, it's something they can conceptualize. And the third one is, sometimes Americans believe that companies aren't going to do the right thing in order to make money. And when there's an honest-to-God instance of it, they will react to it. Those were the only three messages we used. We didn't talk about the overriding parts about global warming, about greenhouse gases, because we thought we really needed to talk about what people could understand and relate to, not what we cared about. So the first thing was message, second was messenger. We felt when we talked about health, we had the American Lung Association talk about it, because the American Lung Association is all about health. And when they talk about it, people believe it. When business people talk about jobs, people believe that they're responsible for jobs and therefore they'll listen to them. So we had a different message, we had different messengers, and George touched on coalition, but in my mind, he didn't get a chance to go as deeply into it as I know he understands it, which is this. It is true that we made sure that we had a really strong business voice. It is true that we had a very good relationship with organized labor. in 2012, in conjunction with organized labor, we knocked on 5 million doors. So if you're going to be Prop 39 and you want to pass a complicated measure that no one knows anything about, knocking on 5 million doors a few times is actually a pretty good way to pass it. But the last thing is this, and I know most of you know this, but I feel as if it's almost my ethical responsibility to make this statement almost every time I talk about this, which is this. The number one group in California that routinely votes 20% ahead of the rest of the state for environmental issues is Latinos. Number two group, Asian Americans. Number three group, African Americans. So if you want to do something that deals with the environment and you really think that your coalition doesn't include most of the people in the state of California, I think you're kidding yourself. So if you really want to pass something, you have to go out to the people who will vote to you for you. And that is something that we made a huge point about that was different from the previous propositions and that people don't normally expect. So that may be the model that works for California propositions. But as June Carter says in the movie Walk the Line, "You've got me out on stage, Mr. Cash. Is that where your plan ends?" So I want to talk a couple, maybe our plan goes a little further. I want to talk you guys through a couple other things we're doing. One is we 2.5 years ago, George and I were two of the three founding board members of a business voice around the country. It's called the Advanced Energy Economy. The idea is business, we cannot win this fight without a strong business voice. We cannot win this fight if people believe we're job killers. We cannot win this fight unless we're local and granular, state by state. And in fact, we believe that that is the only way we really can build a broad-based coalition on this. And if you look in 2013, the attempt to roll back RPS and energy efficiency standards across the country, if you check, has gone absolutely nowhere. And it's been the kind of thing that we're doing with a whole bunch of other people, but that AEEE has been part of a coalition that has meant we've not lost any of these. And we strongly believe, we think that's where it's coming. We think that kind of gritty, state-by-state involvement where you get into the details, God is in the details for a lot of these things. But we really feel as if that is something that is important. And, you know, we've seen it when I've gone to different parts of the country, the clean energy companies are desperate to put themselves together into a voice. It's really important that that voice exists and the companies know it, and a lot of them are not huge companies and don't have the ability to have government relations, so someone has to do it. This is a nonpartisan thing. It changes the dialogue away from jobs versus the environment. It's something that fits in exactly what ELI is doing. Let me see, the other thing that we're doing that along these lines is we started something called Risky Business. And that is basically a study to make the rational case for understanding climate risk as an economic phenomenon. The idea is that if we do nothing, what is the cost of that? That the actual decision to do nothing is a decision, is a choice. We feel as if the status quo is where we are, but actually choosing the status quo is a decision, and in my opinion, an absolutely disastrous decision. But we're going to go through the group of people who came hatched up this idea. Hank Paulson, Republican, former Treasury Secretary, Mike Bloomberg, independent mayor of New York, and me. So you can see, I am very good at picking partners. I mean, I'm like one of the great doubles players in tennis. But once again, and let me say this, that George is on the advisory committee. You know, we think that this is important to lay to rest the idea that this is jobs versus the environment. We want to have a bunch of absolutely credible people talking about what it means economically to do nothing on climate. So in this regard, in regards to Risky Business, my first ask of you people tonight is to support me in the Tom Cruise role. I think it's me, to be honest. So I want to talk a little bit about, let me just conclude by saying this. When people talked about why the 2010 bill failed in the Senate, there's a long, I think it's 85 pages or 115 pages by a Harvard researcher named Theda Skocpol. And she said basically there wasn't a broad-based support for it on a local level in the United States of America. That basically, when people went home to their districts, they weren't hearing from their constituents that this is something that people actually cared about. And when you think about what that means, if you look at the polling, and I'm pretty obsessive about reading polls, 70% of Americans think that we're right about this, which is a very high number. But it's not that relevant a number, actually, politically. Because if 70% of the people agree with you, but they don't care about it very much, that is not going to change anybody's vote. The only time it really affects elected officials is when people care about it passionately, when that's the thing they live for. And when you think about the great changes in American politics, there are people who I would think of as identity warriors. They're not wondering if the issue is about them. The issue is their identity. And they may disagree with you about everything else, but that is the overriding issue for them, and that's actually what has to happen here. Now, there are only two things that can happen here, in my opinion. Either 97% of the scientists are wrong, or we're going to win. Those are the only two possibilities in my mind. And let me say this, I think people get discouraged about this. I am not remotely discouraged about this. You know, I remember the quote from Hemingway about how you go bankrupt. And they said in one of his novels, how did you go bankrupt? And the man said, I went bankrupt two ways, very slowly and then all at once. That is actually how we're going to win. We're going to win very slowly and then all at once. But we're going to do it with a much broader coalition than people expect or believe in. We're going to do it basically by making this the most important issue for the American people. And let me say this. I quit my job at the end of last year to do this. I had a great job, which I liked a lot, which I'd done for 30 years, where I was grossly overpaid, which is a wonderful thing in and of itself. But I believe that for every generation, there is one big challenge. And I think this is the big challenge. I think that when people look back, this will be the thing that determines whether we are successful or not. This, you know, you go back through American history and remember what the different generations, how they measured themselves, how they measured each other, and how we measure them. And there'll always be one thing that is so much more. I always tease and say, do you remember where your family stood on the great tariff debate of 1873? Nobody knows whether there was a great tariff debate of 1873. There may have been, for all I know. But the fact of the matter is, 13 years before, there was something that everybody remembers. And so, the vision of ELI, a healthy environment, prosperous economies, and vibrant communities founded on the rule of law. That's the vision of ELI. So, what you're doing really matters. What is going on, I think people tend to think of themselves as being less important than they really are. And I think they tend to think of themselves as having less impact than they can really have. But as George Shultz likes to say, democracy is not a spectator sport. You know, when I was growing up in New York, the greatest team for us was the Yankees. And the greatest player on that team was Mickey Mantle. And Mickey Mantle was from a family in Oklahoma. And they were all coal miners and had been coal miners for 100 years. And nobody in the Mantle family ever lived to be 40 years old because they were all breathing coal dust. And they die at 36 to 38. So Mickey Mantle was pretty much of a fall down drunk. You know, he figured like all the other Mantles, he didn't know anything about coal dust. He just figured Mantles died early. So he didn't take care of himself, and his career ended a lot sooner than it could have. And when he was 54 years old, Mickey Mantle said, if I'd known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. And he didn't value his own behavior. Here was this guy who actually threw away an amazing talent and an amazing opportunity. By contrast, I would give you George Shultz. He's 93 years old. He gets up every day and works on this. He is, you know, he's an amazing example for all of us. He's a wonderful guy. He's a great partner. But I think if he's willing at 93 to get up and push himself and keep going, then I don't think we can do anything less. Thank you very much.